Chapter 12. Armand Cortes didn't like guns. He'd seen too many of his family, friends, and colleagues lose their lives to gunfire. Yet here he was, surrounded by them. When he'd first placed his order for this customized Cadillac Escalade, with its extended wheelbase and facing rear seats, he hadn't calculated properly for the cubic footage consumed by a 5-man security detail that was armed for war. Cortes cleared his throat to break the silence. "Lupo," he said. The head of his detail looked up from whatever had consumed his focus on the floor. "Sir?" Cortes pointed with his forehead to the muzzle of the stubby machine gun carried by the guard on Lupo's right. It was pointed at Cortez's belly.
"Fernando,"
Lupo snapped. The young guard's head snapped around.
"Muscle discipline, please."
Fernando seemed startled by his own loss of focus.
"I am very sorry, Mr. Cortes," he said.
He shifted his grip on the weapon so that the buttstock was planted on his thigh and the muzzle was pointed at the headliner. Cortes leaned forward until his elbows were planted on his knees.
"Fernando, is it?"
he asked. The young man could not have been 30 years old, perhaps not 25, and fear clouded his face.
"Yes, sir."
"Is that your real name?"
"Excuse me?"
"Fernando, is that your real name?"
The young man looked uneasily at his comrades, all of whom refused eye contact.
"Yes, sir, it is."
"Be careful not to lie to me," Cortes warned.
I am not lying," he said. "That is my real name."
"Is it the name you were born with?"
The other man hesitated.
"It is an easy question, Fernando. When you were a little boy and your mother wanted you for chores, what did she call you?"
Fernando shifted in his seat.
"Simon,"
he said softly, almost inaudibly. Cortes shifted to the man in charge.
"Lupo, where do you find these men for my detail? Do they think that I would surround myself with people I didn't know about? People whose backgrounds I hadn't researched?"
Lupo didn't answer because he knew the question to be rhetorical.
"I think Simon is a strong name, Fernando,"
Cortes pressed.
"Why did you feel the need to change it?"
The guard's discomfort was morphing into something close to panic. He remained silent.
"Are you afraid of me, Fernando?"
This question was not rhetorical, and Cortes leaned in even closer as he waited for his answer.
"Remember to be truthful."
Looking at his feet, Fernando dipped his chin a bit.
"Perhaps a little,"
he said.
"There you go. Good for you. Now tell me why."
Fernando's eyes expanded to circles.
"Why what, sir?"
"Why are you afraid of me? Have I ever hurt you?"
Fernando shook his head.
"I need to hear answers,"
Cortes said.
"When I ask questions with my mouth, I expect to hear answers with my ears. Save your head motions for your drinking buddies."
"No, sir, you have never hurt me."
Cortes bristled at the emphasis on the pronoun.
"It did not hurt you when I killed your uncle?"
Everyone in the vehicle tensed at those words. When Fernando remained silent, Cortes pressed on.
"I heard that you two were quite close. He was more like a brother than an uncle. Am I wrong?"
Fernando's jaw muscles tightened as his lips pressed into a tight line.
"Again, I must insist on an answer."
"Yes, Mr. Cortes, we were close."
"As close as brothers?"
"Yes, sir, as close as brothers."
The Cadillac hit a rut at the same time it swung a wide turn to the left. Cortez struggled to keep his posture steady without reaching for anything to hold on to.
"Tell me why I killed him."
The look on Lupo's face begged Cortez to back off.
"They say he betrayed you,"
Fernando said, still without eye contact.
"They say. Who is they?"
"I don't remember," Fernando said. "That was a long time ago."
"Not that long," Cortez said. "What, 6, 7 years ago? That's just a blink."
The young guard shrugged.
"Seems longer than that to me. I guess I forgot because I didn't want to remember."
"I see," Cortez said. "Yes, that makes sense."
He pondered for a few seconds.
"Who opened the box?"
"For God's sake, Armand," Lupo said.
Cortez shot out a finger. It was as harsh a warning as he knew to silence his old friend.
"The box, Fernando. Who opened the box? Surely you remember that."
The muscles in the guard's jaw were trembling now, as were his lips.
"Tell your colleagues what was in the box."
Lupo shifted the grip on his own weapon, clearly waiting for Fernando to break and open fire.
"My Uncle Juan's head,"
Fernando said. His voice was barely working.
"I believe there was more than just a head," Cortez goaded. "Armand, stop," Lupo said.
"This is not Nessus, his penis and testicles,"
Fernando said. He sat straight up and looked directly at Cortez, through Cortez, as he spoke the words.
"Yes," Cortez said. "Exactly that.
And it was my grandmother who opened the box. She fainted and hit her head on the floor."
"See? You do remember. And your Uncle Juan didn't betray me, Fernando. He tried to betray me. And he failed. He tried to involve the American DEA in my business, and I needed to make it clear that the price for betrayal is very high."
He gave the guard's knee a playful slap.
"Did I make that point to you, Simon? Do you think you understand the price of betrayal?"
Fernando tried to hold his gaze, but he couldn't.
"Yes, I understand,"
he said to the floor.
"Do you want to know why I think you changed your name?"
Cortez asked. He didn't wait for an answer.
"I think that you were afraid that I would find out my connection to your family. Now, there are only 2 reasons I can think of why that might be."
He slapped the knee of another guard.
"Miguel, can you give me one of those reasons?"
Miguel had been part of Cortez's security detail for nearly 3 years and was a trusted insider.
"The first one that comes to mind is that he wanted to get close to you so that he could kill you in retribution."
Tears rimmed in Fernando's eyes now.
"That was my first thought, too," Cortez said. "But that would require him to think that I am an idiot. That would require him to think that I have not put orders in place that if anything happens to me, if I die from a bullet or from a lightning strike, I have plans in place that will pack boxes with parts from his grandmother and little brother and sister."
He paused to let that sink in. He enjoyed watching the horror grow.
"But then I thought I was being too harsh," Cortez continued. "I realized that my second reason for Fernando's strange behavior is undoubtedly the true reason. Because he has pledged his loyalty to me, pledged to die for me if that becomes necessary.
He wants to protect his family from reprisals by the police and the government, perhaps even from my competitors in this ugly business we're in. Look at me, Fernando.
When Fernando looked up, his eyes were pleading and wet. His chin dimpled and quavered as he fought off tears. The Cadillac was rolling to a stop.
Is that the reason you changed your name? Was it because you are deeply loyal to me and would die to protect me from harm?
Hope returned to his eyes, and he nodded vigorously.
Yes, Mr. Cortez, he croaked. I am loyal to you.
They jerked in their seats as the driver shoved the transmission into park.
That's good to hear, Cortez said. And since we've already established that you will only tell me the truth, I will, of course, believe you. Thank you, Mr. Cortez.
Cortez bent his mouth into a smile.
Do your job well, Fernando.
He gestured to the rest of his detail.
All of you, do your jobs well, if not for me, and for your families.
The driver and the shotgun guard flanked the Cadillac.
It seems we're here, Cortez said.
He knocked on the window to signal that he was ready, and then the door opened. He stepped out into the bright sunshine and stretched his face up into the light. Shielded by his team and led by Serena Ramos, the proprietress of tonight's lodging, Cortez made the trip from the car to the hacienda's front door in only 15 paces. Then he was inside with Lupo, and the rest of the team took up whatever positions they would man until morning.
It's so nice to see you again, Mr. Cortez,
Serena said when they were inside. She extended her hand. Cortez took the hand gently in his own and bent to kiss it.
That's very nice for you to say, he said, even though we both know you are lying.
She smiled and did not argue. Cortez's presence at a place was not the result of a negotiation or a response to an invitation. It was obligatory compliance with a demand. Favors were never free in this world, and he had been the most accommodating in sparing the lives of Serena's parents. This was their hacienda, but he controlled it tonight. His instructions had been clear. The parents were to be gone when he arrived, and Serena was to be left behind to serve him in so many ways.
Can I get you something to drink? Serena offered. Either of you?
Cortez smiled and strolled deeper into the living space.
If I recall correctly, your father is a fan of very good scotch. Bring me a bottle of his best, along with two glasses. Three, if you wish to drink with us.
Lupo held up both hands and smiled.
Just a Coca-Cola would be fine for me, he said.
Cortez's expression hardened.
He will have a scotch, he said. And Coca-Cola, too, I suppose.
Cortez didn't even like scotch, but the liquor was not the point. It was all about control and value to the Ramos family. Serena turned to leave.
When is Miguel Martinez due to arrive? Cortez asked. I thought he would be here before me.
I thought the same thing, Serena replied. I will be back very soon with your scotch and maybe a little something to eat.
When she was gone, Lupo said,
You'll be lucky if she does not poison it.
Cortez chuckled.
I look at every day when I go to sleep alive as a gift. So you'll understand why I expect you to take the first bite of everything.
Lupo checked his watch.
Perhaps the last-minute change of venue caught Miguel off guard. That is the very purpose of a last-minute change of venue, is it not? But though you trusted him, I trust him more than I trust anyone else who would profit so much from my death,
Cortez replied. Miguel Martinez and Armand Cortez had been friends since childhood. In their preteen years, they grew to be an accomplished pickpocket duo, one distracting the mark while the other made his move. But as they got older and less cute, the marks became more aware, and the business became too dangerous. That led to a long stint muling product for Fulo Gripando and his group of drug smugglers. Miguel dropped out of sight for 6 years when he was sent to prison, and by the time he'd gotten out, Cortez had already made his move on Gripando. With the old man dead, Cortez had taken things over after a brief war, but he could not afford to have so recent a parolee on his payroll. Miguel had tried his hand at legitimate business, but he soon learned the secret that everyone already knew. Legitimate businesses of any value no longer existed in the parts of the country where anyone wanted to live. Everyone in power was on the take, and by the time you paid tribute to everyone from the local beat cop up through the politicians and the racket runners, there was very little left for you and your family. Want to work at one of the American automobile manufacturing plants? That's fine. Want to open a manufacturing plant of your own? Forget it. Exactly one business model survived in Mexico for small entrepreneurs, and that was the business that employed Armand Cortez. Miguel had grown as a lieutenant in the army of Santiago Lopez, Cortez's lead rival, either of whom would shoot the other on sight. In his trusted position, Miguel had grown to be most useful to both sides as a conduit for communication. This particular meeting had been called by Lopez via Miguel, who said that the topic would be revealed when they were face to face. The original site for the parley was set to be in a low-rise office park off of Highway 2, but just an hour ago, Cortez announced the change to this hacienda about 20 kilometers south, off of Highway 45. He didn't expect an assassination attempt, but the unlikelihood became even stronger with a change. If it pissed Lopez off, then so be it. Cortez couldn't see how he had much to lose through the cancellation of a meeting whose subject he didn't know. As a city, Juarez was a dump, a disaster, a slum. Cortez spent as little time up here as possible, but like any other business, this required him to monitor activities from time to time. He had trusted lieutenants, of course, but all too often they grew distracted and stupid, tempted by both the product they made and the flood of money that it brought in. Cortez paid his people well enough to buy their loyalty, and all of them knew the penalty for betrayal. The Ramos family's decorating aesthetic seemed more Texan than Mexican, with the longhorn display over the fireplace and the furniture made of saddle leather. Francisco Ramos, the family patriarch, had earned his fortune in a different type of drug distribution business, serving as the general manager for one of America's biggest pharmaceutical companies. Cortez found the irony to be delicious. While the American government and its citizens grew rich watching their investment portfolios grow fat on the proceeds of pharmaceuticals, they dedicated billions of dollars to ruining Cortez's drug cartel. The sound of vehicle tires crunching gravel drew his attention toward the front windows.
"It would seem that we're about to find out what the big emergency is," Cortez said.
He rose and walked to the front door to greet the newcomers. Commensurate with his rank within the Lopez organization, Miguel traveled with only a small security detail, a driver and a body man in a solo Chevrolet Suburban. A head taller than Cortez and twice as round, Miguel had the look of a man who was comfortable in his business. As he exited out into the sunshine, he shielded his eyes for a second and then waved to his old friend.
Cortez walked out to meet him in the yard.
Miguel, my brother, how are you?
They embraced, and then Cortez stepped aside to allow Miguel to lead the way.
You're welcome to bring your security man in with you if you like, Cortez offered.
I arrived on the assumption that I would not need him, Miguel said with a wink. And if I do, I will be woefully outgunned.
If there is a fight, my friend, I will not have been the one to start it.
Once inside, Cortez took the lead. He helped himself to the thickest, plushest chair, the one that was positioned opposite the huge television screen. He gestured for Miguel to take a seat on the adjacent sofa. If each of them shifted about 45 degrees in their seats, they could see eye to eye. Lupo made himself invisible behind his boss. While they'd been distracted, a wooden serving tray had arrived carrying glasses and a bottle of Laphroaig scotch, along with a block of cheese and some bread, and a Coca-Cola. Serena had disappeared. Cortez poured 3 scotches and passed out 2, keeping the 3rd for himself. He offered a silent toast to the room, took a sip, and sat back in his chair.
All right, Miguel. Let's get to it. What is so secret and urgent that we need to meet in person like this?
Miguel rolled his eyes.
Why do you think?
This is not a game I'm willing to play, Cortez said.
The edge of annoyance in his tone was sharp and clear.
Just tell me what you want me to hear.
Miguel looked to Lupo for support, but Cortez didn't follow his gaze. Lupo's silence spoke his agreement with his boss.
The violence in America, Miguel said. Mr. Lopez is upset that you are bringing too much attention to our businesses.
Cortez waited for more, but after a few seconds of silence, he said,
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, please, Armand. You say you don't want to play games, and now I don't know what you are talking about.
This time, Cortez made his tone angry.
You can clarify your meaning, or you can turn around and leave.
Miguel held up his hands as if surrendering.
Okay,
fine. In Virginia, the kidnappings and the murders, the 2 children. That is precisely the kind of violence that awakens the American media, and we don't need stop,
Cortez said. He twisted in his seat to look at Lupo.
Do you know what he is talking about?
I have no idea.
Look, Armand, I understand that your business is yours and that neither Mr. Lopez nor I can change how you decide to run things. My mission is simply to express
you don't understand, Miguel,
Cortez interrupted.
I am not avoiding anything or dodging any question. I do not know what you're talking about.
The Kendall children, Miguel said. Oh, excuse me. The children of Bluebird.
The words startled Cortez. First of all, how did Santiago Lopez know about his team in America? And kidnapping?
Those boys were not kidnapped, he said. They were sent to a secure orphanage.
Miguel's expression changed. He cocked his head like a confused puppy.
Are you seriously telling me that you do not know what happened to them?
I have told you several times, Cortez said.
Those boys, as you call them, never made it to the orphanage. Their car was stopped along the way, their escorts were killed, and the boys were taken. How can you not know this?
Cortez turned on Lupo.
How can we not know this?
How does he know it?
Lupo countered.
And how do we know he's telling the truth?
Why would I lie about such a thing?
Miguel asked.
Why would I do such a thing? Cortez shouted. This is madness.
To keep the parents quiet, Miguel said. With their children in custody, they will not reveal the secrets of your organization.
Don't be stupid, Cortez said.
Better yet, don't assume that I am stupid. What they know cannot hurt me. They are enforcers. There are other enforcers as well. We all have them. And what they know is what everyone already knows. I don't need them to be silent, and if I did, I would have them killed. But seize the children? Absolutely not.
And what about the family who kept them?
Who?
The family who kept the boys temporarily, Miguel explained. Why did you kill them?
Again, I don't know what you're talking about. Where is all of this coming from?
We have our contacts just as you do, Miguel said. And you don't need to know who they are.
That was a fair answer.
Assuming what you tell me is true, Miguel, it is as I explained to you. I have nothing to do with it.
The American Drug Enforcement Administration thinks that you do, Miguel said. And that poses a problem for us all. If they make their border tighter, that hurts all of us.
He fired down the rest of his scotch and gasped against the burn. Cortez stood to escort him to the door.
I will do what I can to get to the bottom of what's going on, he promised.
Miguel shook his old friend's hand.
It's not like you to lose control of your people, Armand.
Nothing is out of control, so long as I can bring it back under control,
Cortez said with a smile. It was too easy to forget what a good friend Miguel had been for all those years. Miguel held the handshake for a few seconds too long, raising concern.
Is something wrong?
Cortez asked.
I don't know, Miguel said. I hesitate to bring it up because if you thought the first part was outrageous, then this next rumor is truly absurd.
Cortez waited for it.
I won't insult you by asking this as a question, Miguel said. I'll make it a statement instead. I have spoken to people who think that you are smuggling chemical weapons into the United States to arm terrorists. If this is true, Mr. Lopez urges you in the most strident terms to stop doing so. This, he says, is non-negotiable.